there's a lot of people out there whose job it is to be offended for other people. It's like, hey, these are opinions people disagree with. Like, hey, United States, everybody.
Comedian Adam Carolla hosts the most downloaded podcast in the world, which might be why he's target number one in a lawsuit claiming that all podcasters are in violation of intellectual property law, because the very act of archiving recorded audio on the internet is patented. Companies who make most of their money from these sorts of lawsuits are often called patent trolls. And while most people fold up and settle with the trolls, Carolla is fighting back and says the future of podcasting is at stake. We met up with Carolla at his Glendale studio and warehouse to talk about his fight against the patent trolls, his new book, President Me, his personal politics, and his recent run-ins with various media outlets that he says have tried to ambush him.
Adam, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thanks for being here, Zach.
Here at Reason TV, we've covered the patent troll issue in the past, and usually what happens is people just settle with them because they have so much leverage, it's so expensive to even go to court, they're in some place in Texas, yet you have taken a stand and you are fighting back. Why are you fighting back against the patent trolls?
Well, I'm a hero. I mean, I guess that's sort of is overstating the obvious. But other than that, few things. They didn't really give us much of a choice. They asked for $3 million, which seems like a lot. And so why wouldn't we fight back? And then we started to kind of think about it that we were just sort of number one on their shakedown list. And I'm assuming they just get to everyone who was in the top 1,000 on iTunes eventually in the podcasting world. So we sort of felt like, well, it'd be nice for our podcasting brothers not to give them X amount of dollars, because our assumption is, since these guys are just a sort of, they're not in it for the sport, and they're not in it for justice. It's a business for them, pure and simple. Like, you know, sometimes people are like, aren't you angry at them? And I'm like, who's them? You know, it's like, it's like being angry at the government for collecting taxes. Like that's what they do. Mm. That's what they do. You know, they're a bunch of lawyers. They get together, they buy patents, they sue people, they make money. So I'm assuming that if we settled up with them, that they would just go after everybody who did a podcast and demand that they settle up with them as well. And since nobody could afford the $1.5 million it would cost to fight it in court in whatever part of Texas, Eastern Texas, it ended up in, then they'd have no choice. So it was a kind of a, I don't know, it's like when they take hostages, when terrorists take hostages, if you start negotiating with them, then they start kidnapping more camera crews. So we just figured, let's save the next camera crew and we'll take the duct tape and the zip ties and we will rally the community, the podcasting community, and we'll get them to rally their fans, and we'll all start this fund to save podcasting. And that's what we've done.
And I understand you made a recent trip to Washington, D.C. to try to get some change done, because you're talking about a system. It's a system that is broken. How did that trip go for you?
It was awesome. I think it was Wednesday at noon. I was in one of the congressional buildings talking to a group of very dapper young people, telling them my story and about why it was important that we had some reform on these. I know I said reform. Where I hit a weird syllable. We needed some reform on this whole patent trolling. We need some legislation on this. And it was inspiring, it was rousing. There were tears, there was laughter, there was applause, and then more tears. And then I got in the car and I started driving for Richmond, Virginia, where I had to do a show that night. I got a call an hour later that said Leahy from Vermont shot it down.
Oh. Great.
So, by the way, it gave me renewed belief in the system and how one man could make a difference. Oh, wait a minute. It was a total waste of time. Complete another waste of time, because Leahy, the Democrats, even though this was a bipartisan thing, are just in the back pocket of the Trial Lawyers Association and the college, whatever, and probably Big Pharma, and that was the end of it. But he did, because he's a hero, because Leahy's a hero, he did explain that this was very important Because you know how about, you know that all those things are super important that you're not going to get to for a year or so.
Oh, yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah,
like priorities. When your doctor says, hey, this is really important, you go, right, I'll see you in a year.
Right.
Anything super important, like your mechanic goes, hey, man, you got to get these brakes fixed. It's really important. You go, all right, I'll see you in, 2016?
Yeah.
Like, right. I'm great. I mean, it's a great emotional victory that he thinks it's so important that we should do nothing about it. But at least he's a hero because he did explain how important it was.
Yeah, it must feel good to talk about.
As he's crushing this bill, he's going, but don't worry. It will be back and I'll crush it again. Just give it another year.
Last time we talked to you, we talked a little bit about fixing LA and what you would do or what we could do once we got Villaraigosa out of there. And Villaraigosa's gone. Now you have a book out called President Me. Mm. You've been doing the Washington, D.C. circuit. So what would President Corolla administration look like? What are the priorities there? What's important to you?
Well, first off, I was wrong about Villaraigosa. He will be missed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a void. Oh, no, wait a minute. No one cares. He's horrible. I can't believe he's going to run for governor.
Yeah.
Wow. What's his platform going to be? Like, hey, I fucked up L.A. Now let's see what I can do for California. Like, he drove L.A. into the ground. Now you're just going to drive all of California into the ocean? Like, based on your what?
Yeah.
Your what? L.A., for me, for a place that is, it's where we're taxed at the rate. I mean, there can be no less bang for your buck than L.A. in terms of, like, normally, if you're going to get taxed at this rate, your garbage gets picked up or the cops show up when you call them and little things like that.
You walk on the sidewalks, for instance.
Yeah.
Tripping.
This town, if you travel around the country as I do, this town is trashy. I mean, there's graffiti everywhere. There's garbage everywhere. There are weeds springing up through the sidewalks and the cracks by the side. Like, if you just drive down the freeway, it's covered in garbage and weeds. And you know the thing that's funny? We got barbed wire around the freeway signs.
Yeah.
I've traveled. I don't think they have that in Beirut. I really don't. Like, I've been in the hubs of Detroit, and I've been south side of Philly. Like, I've been everywhere. Mm. I haven't seen razor wire around the freeway signs. Mm. That's one of those gut check moments for a city. Like, that's one of those, you know, in the movies where the drunken dad is spanking his kid, and he does that, and he looks up, and he sees himself in the mirror, you know, and he does that. And he looks at the whiskey bottle and he starts hugging his kid and crying.
Yeah.
At some point when we're putting the razor wire up around the freeway signs, there's got to be a point where the citizens of Los Angeles look at the razor wire and go, what the fuck is going on? What are we doing here?
Why hasn't that happened yet, do you think? Why hasn't there been an uprising against whatever's going on here?
Well, 8 years of Villaraigosa is not going to help anything get done, right? Because he's just banging Telemundo reporters, so he's not in, I don't think he's in town, or if he is, he's partying with Charlie Sheen in Mexico. Like, he's not, he doesn't maybe not know about the freeway signs. I don't know. He probably doesn't travels by helicopter.
He's a busy man.
He's a busy man. Yeah, somebody's got to fail that bar. That bar's not going to fail itself.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to fail for it. Fail that bar. So, you know, Villaraigosa's, you know, picking up that. I don't know, but that's my platform. My platform is literally just stand on a platform under a freeway sign on the 101 and go, behold, we have razor wire around our signs.
Yeah.
And behold, I'm getting taxed at a 40% rate. Mm. So my feeling is one or the other.
Sure.
I either want to be taxed at 40% and have water lilies around the freeway sign, or I want to be taxed at 25%, and you can use all the barbed wire you want. You can make it look like Escape from L.A., which, by the way, they didn't think of that in Escape from L.A. They didn't have a good enough crystal ball on the apocalyptic future of L.A. to think, well, let's put barbed wire around the freeway signs.
You know, you take a certain level of flack from some fellow comedians and and the media for some of these criticisms of government or government officials that you level. But I mean, you have your own studio here. You have kind of your own empire. Has that liberated you in a way? And do you think there's going to be...
Yes, leave. Now.
All right, I'm sorry.
All of you. Be off! Sorry.
Yeah, is it liberating for you? And do you think there's other public figures or other celebrities who are going to discover this and there's going to be more people saying the kind of things you're saying?
I don't know if they're going to say whatever it is I say or have been saying. I do know that comedians hate being censored and people that share their opinion hate being censored, and then they hate to have to do their fake apology, which they have to do. The reason they don't mean the apology is, A, they're being forced to apologize by Viacom or the network or CBS or whatever, whoever owns them, who's getting pressure from some group, which is really just one guy sitting in his dad's office somewhere. But they don't want to apologize for jokes that they made because they were jokes. Or at least opinions. And I don't know why we look at this as progress, that people give their opinions and then they apologize and they give their opinions and apologize. And it's like, hey, these are opinions people disagree with. Like, hey, United States, everybody, we're just one big pile historically of opinions that people disagreed with. And that's fine. You get to disagree with those opinions, but you pressuring the person to make a fake apology over whatever it is he said that got your panties in a bunch, even though your panties weren't really in a bunch. There's a lot of people out there whose job it is to be offended for other people.
Yeah.
It's not really them.
Yeah.
They're offended for the fill-in-the-blank community,
right.
But they're not, they don't care themselves.
Yeah,
it's like a little cottage industry of complainers.
There's this whole outrage industry, and I mean, you've actually recently called out a couple media outlets for, you've said, trying to kind of ambush you. You called out NPR, Salon.com. Why do you think they're doing this? Why do you think you're such a target for them?
There's not a lot of people who disagree with them who are willing to even talk to them anymore because of the ambush nature of what they do now. They get, you know, they're very conversational. They bring up stuff and then they print these sort of sensational headlines and they do it out of context. And it's sort of nothing in it for the person who's being interviewed by Salon.com anymore, because all they're going to do is try to make you look like a bigoted, sexist, xenophobic, whatever, you know, in whatever article they're printing. So why even do it? I just do it because I don't care for the most part. But even for me, it used to be that I would do these interviews with these people. They would ask these semi-leading questions. You know, they'd set you up. Who's funnier, men or women? You know, and you just give your answer, men. And then they say, oh, okay, now they're off and running. Now they're setting it up. Like when I did NPR in New York, they had a clip from my podcast of me and Joe Coy to roll into, you know, now it's turning into like interventions, you know, like, hey, listen to this, tell me what you think. That, by the way, 5 years ago, it didn't exist.
Right.
You could sit down with whoever you agreed with or whoever you disagreed with, but they didn't play you a tape, or if they played, if they played a bit or a recording, a snippet, a trailer, whatever, of you, it was a funny bit from his upcoming movie, a funny bit from his upcoming sitcom, or a snippet from the book. It wasn't gotcha. So I go into NPR, they play this gotcha moment with me and Joe Coy, except for they're not smart enough to do their research and realize that that's not me doing Joe Coy's voice. That's Joe Coy, who's an Asian-American comedian. He's doing all the talking and making fun of the Asian-American stereotype. I'm laughing. He's talking. They think it's me doing a Jackie Chan voice. They're doing the gotcha moment. I say, you know, thanks a lot for the ambush, fellas, but you got the wrong guy, because that guy's not me and he's Asian. When I told them the guy was doing the voice was Asian, they were like, well, that helps. Like, they're still not done being, they're still not done with their righteous indignation about something they don't give a shit about.
Let's reframe this a little bit now.
But at least I'm that much closer to the light.
Yeah.
They screwed up. By the way, I did this interview over 2 weeks ago. They've not aired it yet. Gee, what?
We'll see.
The book came out 3 weeks ago. Why aren't you airing your interview with me where I call you out several times on your attempts to ambush me?
Along these same lines, a lot of people try to classify you as right-wing or conservative. You know, we're a libertarian outlet, so our ears kind of perk up when you talk about, you know, cutting taxes or war on drugs or gay marriage. but you seem to kind of reject a lot of the labels. How do you define yourself politically? And in when you're talking,
I don't, for me, it's mostly libertarian. It's just you bring up the topic, I'll give you the answer, and then once you get enough of those answers, you'll go, okay, here's what we have. It's a sort of, are you an alcoholic? Mm. And then you go, do you feel like you need a couple of cocktails to enjoy yourself in a social environment? Yes. Do you drink when you're happy? Yes. Do you drink when you're unhappy? Yes. Do you feel, blah, you know, you check all those boxes. And then at the end, you got Dr. Drew going, hoo-hoo. So for me, I think if you said, would you like to lower taxes? Yes. Are you okay with guys having a pot plant in their backyard? Yes. Would you like government smaller? Yes. I think when you're done with many of these questions, you'll probably end up with libertarian.
And the libertarian alcoholic overlap is pretty high too. So we all.
Hope I was clear.
Yes. Adam, thank you very much for talking to us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Zach.
For Reason TV, I'm Zach Weissmuller.